Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm John McEnroe.
I'm Bjorn Borg.
This is Martina Navratilova.
I'm Mats Wilander.
I'm Stan Wawrinka.
I'm Leighton Hewitt.
I'm Andy Murray.
And you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
So, Tennis Podcast time, folks, and Rafael Nadal has lost a set of tennis. That has happened. First time since 2015. Boris Becker's record survives. Catherine Whittaker was there to witness every last drop of it. And was he saved by the rain, Catherine? That is the first question I want to ask you.
Well, yeah. To what degree he was saved, we'll never know, David, because we won't have the sliding doors type scenario of knowing the two outcomes. But yeah, to an extent, he absolutely was saved by the rain. He was a setting a breakdown, and Diego Schwartzman was showing no signs of relenting. It's not like he was clinging on for dear life. You know, that first set that Schwartzman ended up winning, he had the break and was broken back several times. You know, it's not uncommon for the underdog player to unexpectedly go break up in a set early on, and you think, oh my goodness, what's happening here? And then quickly enough, normal service is resumed, all of their self-belief is sapped away, and it all tumbles away from them very quickly. Not so Diego Schwartzman. He might have had to break three times in that opening set. I'm willing to be corrected because I was only able to watch in and out. But anyway, he was standing up to the sort of mental scrutiny of the what must have been overwhelming situation of being a set up against Rafael Nadal. Unfortunately, leading by a break early on, I think he was leading 3-1 or 3-2 when they were called off. 3-2 maybe when they were called off. For rain in the second set, came back on. Rafael Nadal processed to the next few games, and at the time they were next called off for rain, which ended up being the last time they were called off for the evening, Nadal was leading 5-3. But to whatever extent, yes, Nadal was partially saved by the rain.
Now, as we sort of forensically trying to analyse what went on in that match and how we got to a situation where Nadal has lost the first set against Diego Schwartzman, I think first of all we've got to look at the play of Diego Schwartzman, and I think we also have to recognise that there were no smithereens in sight.
No.
In that first set, Catherine, were there?
Not a smithereen in sight, no. I couldn't be more pleased to be proven wrong. I couldn't wish for a better or more worthy man to humiliate me than Diego Schwartzman. I hope Rafael Nadal was the same. Not that he was humiliated at all in the set and a half of tennis that they played. But he was just brilliant. He was just absolutely brilliant. And the crowd are loving him. Honestly, the it must be something in the Argentine blood that is able to galvanise a crowd. You know, we've tried to hit upon what it is that Del Potro has that gets people behind him, and as much as we can sort of point to specific attributes, we always conclude that it's something ethereal or, you know, impalpable in some way. And Diego Schwartzman, in a very, very different, rather shorter way, has a bit of the same, doesn't he? Gets people behind him. He makes you care. And he had a tactic, David. I mean, Mats Wilander in the Eurosport commentary box was absolutely loving it because
He was.
He had a game plan, and he stuck to it.
I heard him actually talking in an interview during one of the rain delays, and he was. You could see the frustration about a guy like Richard Gasquet, who we talked about before. Simon was making points about him yesterday in the podcast. That was a fantastic show, by the way, with you guys just outside the press room as it was all coming and going. And I sense that's something Matt's loved is that you know, it wasn't just somebody just coming out and waving a white flag. It was, I'm coming out to get you, Rafa. If you can deal with me, little Diego, then good luck to you. But I'm coming. I'm going to bring it.
Yeah, he was I'm the guy that won a 7-love tiebreak against Kevin Anderson. You should fear me.
Yeah. Diddy Diego. It's fantastic. And he was buzzing all around the court. He is so fast. It is like watching one of those cartoons with the Roadrunner, as though you've just sort of got a little cloud of smoke where his legs are going, because they're going so quickly that they're just whipping up the dust off the dirt track of the clay court on Philippe Chatrier court. And also, he's got the power to go with it. That is what I think really gets crowds, you know. And this is the thing with Del Potro, in a completely different way, as you say, in a tall way, in a gigantic way, but in this sort of slight sloth-like slow motion that Del Potro sometimes moves. There's a slight vulnerability about these guys in completely different ways, and people end up tapping into that sensibility. They end up, as you say, caring about them, and yet they're still giving you hope. If you're supporting Diego Schwartzman, he's giving you hope. But no, it was fascinating to watch the rain intervene, so similar to the Rome final mm-hmm. against Alexander Zverev in that way, the weight of the air, the heaviness of the conditions.
Well, I also think the weight of the air, and it was a very bizarre day in Paris, like yesterday, but more so. It felt like we were in Bangkok or something, David. I mean, really, really tropical type warmth and humidity and... Yeah, I mean, for early June in Northern Europe, it's been incredibly bizarre. The closeness and the stifling heat of while still being overcast, it's been completely bizarre. But I suspect it was a combination of those conditions not suiting Rafa at all, and also the mental effect of that fact having on each of them. Rafa would have known, hang on a second, this isn't ideal for me. I think it probably made him a bit nervous. And Diego Schwartzman would have gone, hang on a minute, if I could have asked for any conditions at all, this is exactly what I would have gone for. Brilliant. So those combined factors, the weather itself, and then the sort of second guessing of the impact that would have in the minds of both players, sort of doubly heightened the impact of the conditions. I believe, David, tomorrow it's going to be less damp. I think it's still going to be overcast. It's not going to be the ideal Rafael Nadal conditions, you know, the hot, sunny, pingy off the court conditions, but I believe it's going to be a bit less heavy and humid. So where that leaves us, I don't know. Probably with a Rafael Nadal victory, I think. I suspect the odds overnight are still very, very heavily in favour of Nadal, but...
Well, he's just 2 points away, isn't he, from levelling the match now, 5-3, 30-15. But, I mean, the other big talking point was the treatment that he received. I think he had a medical timeout, didn't he? And he had... initially, I saw him having his right wrist and forearm strapped, and then it later became apparent that actually he'd had both of his wrists and forearms strapped, taped up, basically. And, you know, the alarm bells are ringing. You're thinking, well, this is a guy who 2 years ago had to withdraw from this tournament halfway through it because of a left wrist problem, and he wasn't the same again all year. He didn't play, basically, again. And I think many of us wonder whether his career was done at that point. And we've had that thought once or twice. Well, what a comeback he's made. And it really was jolting, wasn't it, to see him get that sort of treatment. Then what happened after that, Catherine? Because when they came back after the rain delay, Simon Reid in the Eurosport commentary box had been talking to Alex Kerecha. Turns out that, or at least in the view of Alex, not an injury at all. That this was an issue of sweat getting onto his hands, and he wanted to have some thick tape to mop it all up. So, you know, intrigue surrounds Nadal. And of course, we don't get to hear from him in his post-match press conference because he hasn't finished the match. So, yeah, we don't know for sure, but that's what Alex Kuretsch says. And, well, he's closer to the situation than most, one would think.
It's interesting. Does that officially count as a medical timeout? Preventative sweat wicking? I don't know.
Yeah, well, I mean, it shouldn't, should it? But I suppose what one might say is, well, who else is going to be able to tape his wrists for him?
Could tape him himself at the change of ends? I don't know. It's certainly an air of mystery on the whole match that I didn't. I don't doubt Alex Kuretsch's inside and knowledge. What I potentially doubt is, you know, how would they tell anyone, even Alex Kuretsch, if there were an injury to Nadal's wrist, if those problems that were plaguing him previously were plaguing him once again? Because the fact is, A, you don't want to give anything. You know, Nadal's locker room aura at the moment is buying him several games per match. You know, his dominance on clay, his record on clay recently is such that, you know, he's walking out onto the court terrifying opponents. Well, unless you're 5'7" Diego Schwartzman. But those are the facts. So giving away any of that locker room aura is not advisable. And second of all, he can probably not definitely, but probably still win this tournament with a bit of an injury. So why, I don't know, why give anything away? So I don't know either way, David. I just think that if it were an injury, we probably wouldn't know either. Do you see what I'm saying?
No, I just can't see. Somebody made this point to me on Twitter and I thought, well, actually quite a good point. You don't get two injuries at the same time, do you?
That's a very good point.
Unless you're getting tendonitis in both wrists. I mean, it's just, you know, it's a bit rotten luck, isn't it, Catherine? I mean, you know, if you ended up getting two wrist injuries at the same time.
That's a very good point. Maybe, oh gosh, no, hang on. I was just about to inadvertently get myself in very dodgy territory with some sort of handcuff related comment, but no, let's move on quickly.
Do I follow this up, listeners? That's the question. Do I probe here, or do I let it? I think I'll leave it. Let's just leave that one to the imagination, shall we? You know, we'll give you something else to get your teeth into in a second about Catherine related stories from today. But we'll leave that one just there for now. So anyway, I asked on social media what everybody else thinks was going on with Nadal today. Stephen White said it was a question of Schwartzman playing out of his skin, and he imagines it will continue the way it did after the rain delay with Nadal coming back. John Wood has said he reckons that Nadal was struggling with the pressure. I mean, how could you be struggling with pressure after winning 10 of these things? But, you know, he obviously wants to win another one. Julia Molnar said he seemed very nervous. I actually thought that as well. He did look nervous. But I think anxiety comes over Nadal a little bit when things aren't going his way. I mean, one of the reasons must be he's so used to winning comfortably. So, you know, this guy was stepping up to him. So we'll see. We'll see when they resume.
Having won 10 of them and being the odds-on favourite, I mean, that's the ultimate pressure, isn't it? He can only disappoint this tournament. He cannot possibly surpass expectations. There is no scenario for Rafael Nadal this fortnight where he can surprise or surpass expectations in any way. If he wins, everyone shrugs and goes, okay, Rafael Nadal is, you know, as good as we suspected on clay in 2018. And if he loses, he's disappointed. He's disappointed us all. So it's sort of neutral or lose for Nadal, such as his, you know, the exceptional weight of expectation on him.
Yes, well, I can't wait for tomorrow anyway. Hopefully the weather will play ball and it'll all start at 12 o'clock local time tomorrow.
I mean, yeah, 3 hours earlier than expected, David. Thanks, rain. the rain, I mean, I know for Diego Schwartzman, it's probably, you know, he's probably had the worst time of it rain-wise, but I think I'm probably second in the queue behind Diego in terms of who's...
You probably are, because you had a little bit of a mishap in the rain today, didn't you? What happened?
A rain-related mishap. I fell down some stairs, David. I fell down some stairs.
Dear.
Yep.
You all right?
Yep, I'm bandaged up. I am. I'm good to go. Like Fabio Fognini against Carl Edmund, I've had some heavy taping. I'm ready to, you know, make it through to the fourth round now.
Fantastic. Yeah. See, nothing stops Catherine Whittaker, Rafa. You know, come on, get your act together. So the other match that took place was on the men's side was Marin Cilic against Juan Martín Del Potro today. They are in the first set. So they're 5-5 in the first set tiebreak. So that one is anybody's.
I think they were called off first of all at 5-5 and then called off second of all at 5-5 in the tiebreak. I mean, crikey. Mm.
Who would you back for that? I'd probably go Del Potro.
Del Potro has the far... I think he has a 10-2 head-to-head against Cilic coming into this one. I mean, obviously, it's no great surprise to see them in a tiebreak. Cilic probably in, you know, on paper in the better form coming into this French Open, but that was largely because of, you know, Del Potro's hip injury in Rome and him generally just not being talked about because we didn't know how much we could rely on him physically. But so far, I think he had that bizarre match. Was it in the first round or the second? I think the first round. I apologise. I can't quite remember who it was against, but I remember seeing the very bizarre score. It was against a Frenchman, wasn't it? Was it Mahut?
Nicolas Mahut.
It was Nicolas Mahut, yeah. Very bizarre topsy-turvy scoreline. And the assessment that I gleaned from that was that it took his hip, that sort of core of his body, quite a long time to warm up. But once it was there, he was fine, and it's loosened up since then. So provided Del Potro is physically fit, and that's always the asterisk next to his name, I think probably Delpo.
I think Cilic needs that first set.
Yeah, I certainly was surprised, David, when I saw the 10-2 head-to-head. I thought it would be a bit more nip and tuck than that. But then I sort of went back through my memory bank and actually realised I couldn't remember all too many Cilic victories over Delpo.
I think a lot of them have been close, though. You know, I think Delpo's won most of the close ones to go with any that he's won comfortably. But anyway, so yes, that will happen tomorrow, the resumption of that. On the women's side, Catherine, a little bit like the last few days, the match that we weren't expecting to deliver, well, it delivered. I mean, that's not quite fair, is it? I mean, Halep against Kerber is a cracking match on paper, and it was a cracking match in reality, but it wasn't the one that was getting the hype. The one that was ditching Halep and Kerber to the sidelines in terms of attention was Muguruza against Sharapova. And I saw your preview with Chris Evert. It was fascinating to hear her view about how she felt physically and game-wise Muguruza was the stronger, but Sharapova was the stronger mentally. And as it turned out, it was an absolute thrashing that Muguruza handed out. It was 6-2, 6-1.
Yeah, and in what, an hour and 10 minutes? And I think, about 12 of those minutes were occupied with one game early on in the first set. I mean, yeah, I spoke to Patrick Mouratoglou, Serena Williams' coach, about that match late on this evening, and he was pretty scathing about Maria Sharapova, I have to say. He said she just didn't show up in that match. He was actually commentating it for French Eurosport, and he said on air after the first set that Muguruza won 6-2, and she won it largely, I think, due to Sharapova's errors, her double faults, her just, you know, her just not showing up. He said the absolute last thing that's going to happen is that Muguruza will win the second set 6-2. He said there is just no way Sharapova, being the competitor that she is, will let this be a thrashing. She might still lose, but it definitely won't be a thrashing. And what happened? She lost it 6-1. Yeah, she wasn't there today. She wasn't. I mean, I think the second set was more about Muguruza being brilliant. I think she relaxed after that first set, and she really was great. She had a heavier hit than Sharapova, and if she's out hitting her, you know, add on top of the fact that we know Muguruza has better movement than Sharapova, particularly on clay, then, you know, that's a done deal, really. But Sharapova's, I mean, in particular her serve, she didn't stand a chance today without her serve, and it just wasn't firing. But if there's one thing, you know, everyone has bad days, but on Sharapova's bad days, you never expect her kind of just not to be there. She's always there, you know, you always think she's only a millimetre away from getting you into a tussle, and it and that wasn't the case today, was it? It was a vacant Sharapova. I mean, she was doing all the things she usually does. You know, she was grunting in the warm up, David. In the knock up, she was grunting, and I thought, goodness me, she is trying to make a statement here. And then, you know, she serves for the first time, and it's three double faults in her opening service game. And suddenly you're thinking, okay, maybe she's a bit nervous and she'll settle down. And then she gets broken again, and you're just waiting for Maria Sharapova to turn up. The Maria Sharapova that you know so desperately wants to win that match to prove a point. You know, Chris Evert said it on air to me today. She wants to prove that she can win a Grand Slam, not on Meldonium. That's her mission statement at the moment. And yeah, for her to know how determined she is and the desire she has to do that, for her to put in that performance today is a bit of an incongruous turn of events, I think. But hey, Muguruza was brilliant.
It was very interesting to see Muguruza's body language, though, because of the way she carries herself generally. But it was as though she was playing her big sister, the way she... Because they're physically so tall, they hit the ball so hard, and they both like to intimidate and impose themselves. And you just saw them standing toe-to-toe and teeing off on each other in that first set. And Muguruza was just simply better. She's just... I mean, OK, maybe it wasn't a good day for Sharapova, but Muguruza had an answer for everything. She was digging balls out and then turning the tables and dominating. And she looked the younger woman, the fresher sort of player that's, you know, just a almost Sharapova Mark II. And it was, that's not to say Sharapova can't turn that around in the future, but it was really quite jarring to see the way Muguruza was handling her. And I was mightily impressed. I thought it was a brilliant performance.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Halep against Kerber was an interesting match. Kerber won the first set on a tiebreaker. Again, I think we saw some mental strength from Simona Halep, because
yes,
Kerber was on it today, wasn't she? And Halep just wasn't having it.
Halep was 4-love down in the first set. I mean, even within that set, I know she ended up going on to lose it, but I was so impressed. You know, she could have just let that set go and gone, I'll fight for this in sets 2 and 3. But she didn't. She fought for it. She showed Angelique Kerber that I'm in this. I'm not going to wilt under the pressure. This isn't going to be a Simona Halep not showing up moment. You know, we talked about, I think it was our podcast after the Rome final, that there had been too many instances from Simona Halep, too many days when she's just not shown up, you know, put in, you know, 6-1, 6-2, 6-2, 6-2 type losses. And, you know, she showed Angelique Kerber in that first set, that's not going to be today. You might beat me, but that's not going to happen today. And I loved that from Simona Halep. And yeah, 6-3, 6-2 in the second and third sets. And oh, I just think she's amazing, David. I think for her to be doing what she's doing with the scar tissue she must have from her previous finals, from this time last year, I think the scar tissue is probably least from the Australian Open final, because, you know, she knows she left absolutely everything out there and it sort of just was completely on a knife edge. But the final here last year, setting a break up, points for 4-love, I think, against Yelena Ostapenko, or 4-1, certainly points for, I think she's amazing. I think she's amazing. It would have been, you know, pretty easy for her to have bowed out on long then today against Angelique Kerber, who played brilliantly. You know, for her to have just not quite shown the fight and made the statement that she did. But she's, you know, she is made of strong, strong stuff, Simona Halep. And, oh, goodness me, Halep against Muguruza in the semi-final.
Who's winning that? Oh. What do you got?
Do you know what? I've been doing all these... sort of talking head interviews with, you know, all of our various pundits at Eurosport, Chris Evert, Kim Clijsters and Patrick Mouratoglou today, talking through those two semi-finals. And usually I would ask for predictions at the end, but I didn't. I just don't think it's fair. Nobody knows. Honestly, people aren't just sitting on the fence in a David Law-esque way. They genuinely don't know. Particularly about the Muguruza-Halep one, I think broadly, I think if people had to pick, they'd be going for Sloane Stephens in the All-American clash. But Muguruza-Halep, I'm not sure anybody is prepared to really...
Who are you picking?
I'm picking Stephens. I just think she's almost impossible to beat at the moment. I think Simon Briggs might have been onto something, you know. I think it might turn out to be the greatest non-prediction in tennis podcast predictions history. I'm certainly picking Stephens tomorrow. I was trying to talk myself around.
Let me give you
that.
A bit of info. The head-to-head is 3-1 in favour of Muguruza, and the one match they've had on clay was in Stuttgart. Halep won it 3-6, 6-1, 6-3. So three sets of
indoor
there.
Indoor clay, the though, match, isn't it? It's difficult to know how much to read into that.
And again, you don't know which Halep's going to turn up, because the last time they played in Cincinnati last year, 6-1, 6-love for Muguruza.
Oh, I think the right Halep will show up. Whatever happens, whoever wins, I think it'll be a contest. I think the right Halep will show up.
I think it's
going to
be an absolute humdinger.
Yeah, belter.
I really do.
I do too.
I think Stephens will take out Keys, in my opinion, on this surface. I think if you stuck it on grass, and if Keys had a good day, I'd back her. You know, and you could probably pick your odds on a hard court. But on a clay court, I think Stephens is such a clever, canny player. I mean, Keys would just have to just blast her off the court in order to beat Stephens, and I just
She'd
don't see that
just
happening for long
go
enough.
Go out there like just determined to not make any rallies last more than three shots.
No,
yeah, you know,
no,
it just has to be 1-2 punch, boom, done. And hey, if she can do that, good luck to her. But doing that consistently for two sets is a heck of an ask. Yeah, I'm going Stephens, and I don't know.
Well, I'm going Halep just because I said she'd win the title. But then I have to say I did not expect Muguruza to be playing this level of tennis. So, Catherine, anyway, you go and put your feet up. By the way, quality name dropping earlier. The old Chris Evert, Kim Clijsters, Patrick Mouratoglou. Very well done.
I've
with
had
that.
A bad day. Go and put your bad day, David. Allow me some name drop. Yeah.
Go and put your feet up. Go and have the cheese board. Hotel cheese board awaits. Catherine, I'm just going to tell you very quickly, listeners, about some results in Surbiton today, where Dan Evans reached the quarterfinals having qualified for the tournament. I mean, that is a good result from him, as did Gabby Taylor, the young British player who's making waves. She actually beat Heather Watson in the first round. Good win for her. Tomorrow, Katie Swan is in action against Harriet Dart, and Katie Bulter is playing as well, both trying to get to the quarterfinals. That is it for another daily edition of the Tennis Podcast. From Roland Garros, certainly in the case of Catherine Whittaker. We'll be back with more tomorrow. This was our 12th one, our 12th daily. We hope you've enjoyed them. Leave us a review on iTunes. Tell everybody you know about the Tennis Podcast. Get our listening figures up. They're flying, I'm telling you. We're delighted with how it's going. We've been produced in association with The Telegraph, with Melanie Bowes, our executive producer, with TennisBalls.com, with Triple S, with our mascot, of course, Charlie the Ferret, and we'll be back tomorrow.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.